Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Minority Friday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Democrats about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
And good morning. In studio with us this morning, Alana Rubel, Representative Rubel from District 18. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Wonderful. Great to be here.
What are you working on?
I am working on so many things right now. I have a couple bills in the hopper. One is to restore dental coverage to folks that are on Medicaid. This is not to add anyone to Medicaid, but the people that are already there. Legislature stripped away dental a few years ago.
During the we're broke period.
Exactly.
And now we're in the we're flush period, so we want to put it back.
And so at the time, it was just to save money. They weren't actually saying that people on Medicaid don't need dental work.
Exactly. They very much need dental work. It was done in 2011 as part of the recession era cuts where they were just looking to slash everything in sight. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it's very penny wise, pound foolish. It turns out when you take away preventive dental care, these folks end up turning up with much worse problems like diabetes and cardiovascular problems and kidney disease. And then the taxpayer's on the hook for that. So you actually end up losing thousands of dollars a year for each of these people because they're not getting preventive dental care.
Yeah, I believe there's a commercial on TV where the woman explains that most everything you eat goes through your teeth.
So true. So true. So that's one bill I'm working on. Also working on one to eliminate mandatory minimum sentencing for drug offenses. Right now, judges have discretion for almost any crime that a person commits in terms of setting the sentence, but not for drug offenses.
Okay.
And, you know, you have a certain amount of a certain drug on you. They have no choice. They've got to lock you up for 10 years, 15 years. Doesn't matter if you're 17 years old. Doesn't matter if it's a first-time offense. They just have no choice.
Why is that the law? Why? What was the reasoning behind making it that way?
You know, it's funny. It passed in 1992, and it was part of the war on drugs where they, you know, three strikes, you're out, and all these things where they just couldn't lock people up for long enough. They found that it hasn't really had any impact on offenses. In fact, drug offenses have just been climbing, climbing, climbing. It certainly has had effect on our pocketbooks, and now we are overspending on prisons to the point where we're going to have to start shipping them out of state. And actually, funnily, the people that pushed for it in the first place have now come out, at least some of them, and said it was a mistake and we need to repeal it. So Justice Jones, the Supreme Court, has written an op-ed on that, and there's another attorney in town who was really a pusher of this in the first place and said it was a mistake.
Do you think there's a pretty good chance that that will pass?
I really hope so. Okay. I really hope it does. I think we have really strong support on the committee. We just need to get it heard and make sure, you know, people don't get soft when they get started. I mean, they'll get pounded on the other side, I'm sure, by a few constituencies, but I think we're in the right on this one.
All right. I'd like to get your opinion. Members of the Idaho House Educational Committee yesterday, you know where I'm going here.
Oh, yeah.
Continued to balk at the proposed science standard that deal with climate change, even as public testimony came in 100% in favor of the newly revised standards. Tell us about this and how you feel about it.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe we are where we are right now, and we'll see what happens today. And I desperately hope they do the right thing and just approve these good science standards. They shot them down last year, as people may remember, and then a committee came together with the top educators. They had the top science teacher in the state. They had scientists. They really worked hard on this for months, and they unanimously came forward with this recommendation that reflects the scientific consensus on the issue. And actually, if you ask me, it's a pretty wimpy version. They actually pulled climate change references out of some of them. There were some that I actually think are so wimpy now, they may not really fully reflect the realities. You know, they have things like, you know, well, humans can have some impact on biodiversity, some good, some bad. I'm like, well, it's pretty much bad. We're seeing a major drop in species diversity any way you cut it, and it's pretty clearly traceable to human activity. But even these standards, now they're thinking about striking. And, you know, it's just not fair to the Idaho's kids to have them not learn the best science we can teach them.
Is it your opinion then that rather than vote on what should be in a science book, that we perhaps leave that up to scientists and people who write those things?
Well, absolutely. And these standards were developed by scientists and science teachers. And it just seems crazy to me to have these partisan folks swoop in and squash it. And it's not doing our kids any favors if they're learning less accurate science than kids are in other states.
Idaho's the only state that has removed references to climate change, right?
That is correct. I hope we're not going to give other states ideas. At least I hope we remain the only state. But, you know, there's still a chance to save it. The Senate may still save it. And, you know, maybe they'll surprise us all and vote today to actually, you know, keep decent science standards.
You're interested also in hearing aids for children.
You bet. You learn so many things as a legislator when people come to you with these problems that you just didn't even realize existed. But I had a constituent that came to me who has three children who are partially deaf or hard of hearing, and I learned that insurance companies don't cover hearing aids for these kids. You can get it if you're on Medicaid, but you have to be so dirt poor to be on Medicaid that if you're just average poor working family, you're called on to say pay for this entirely yourself. These things are $5,000 to $8,000 a pop. And, you know, this deafness is often congenital. So families that are hit hard, and they may have two or three kids that need these. And, you know, you have a family that's making $30,000 that's suddenly called upon to come up with $25,000 for hearing aids. It ain't happening. And a lot of these kids aren't getting them. I was hearing heartbreaking stories. I heard a story about a 16-year-old kid who came in wearing the same hearing aid she'd received as an infant because the parent couldn't pay to upgrade it. And this thing probably hadn't worked for years. They're supposed to be replaced every 3 years. Kids are suffering in their performance in schools, and it's just not right. So trying to fix that so that the families who need them can get hearing aids for their kids.
We're talking with Representative Ilana Rubel.
You're listening to Minority Friday on 670 KBOI.
...850 on Idaho Talks Live. It is Minority Friday when we talk to a Democrat from the Idaho State Legislature, and it's Representative Ilana Rubel from District 18. Non-compete clauses. Now, in radio, we have them, which means you can't just, like, you know, quit on a Wednesday and start working for a different radio station on a Thursday, something like that.
Right.
And that's generally a contract that people sign.
Right.
But there are some stipulations, I guess, and there are laws about it.
Well, yes. And in 2016, Idaho became the most draconian state in the nation in terms of enforcing non-competes. They basically passed a law. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate this, but it's pretty darn close to what it says. It says the employer always wins. It basically says that anytime a person goes to work for a competitor, this isn't always a clear-cut case. What's a competitor, by the way?
Right.
You know, for an example, you know, I have a friend that works at a company where it makes, you know, beepy noises for trucks when they back up. Someone left and starts a company that makes beepy noises and flashing lights for planes. Is that a competitor? Who knows, right? I mean, the first company doesn't do anything for planes, but they could try to be aggressive and say, well, someday we might want to make something for planes, and yeah. So we consider you a competitor. So it can be really hazy, and employers can be very aggressive in what they call a competitor that maybe the employee wouldn't consider a competitor. So they've signed this agreement when they started, saying they won't go work for a competitor. Some people sign these without even knowing they've signed them. Sometimes it's, you know, people that just sit in their pile of paperwork they get in the first day, and before they know it, they've just signed their life away saying they can't work anywhere else. You have very skilled people, plumbers, who that's all they know to do is be a plumber or a neurosurgeon or whatever. They basically can't work if they can't work for a competitor or in something that's arguably competing. What the legislature did is said in any case where somebody goes to a competitor, your first employer is entitled to basically shut you down, stop you from working at your new job, make you shut down your new business. It put a huge, unmeetable burden on employees who want to change jobs. And really treats these agreements unlike any other type of contract that has ever existed in the history of contract law, to my knowledge. I think it is deeply unfair to employees, deeply unfair to people who might want to start new businesses, and we should just go back to treating them like normal contracts instead of contracts where the employer always wins.
Was that considered to be one of those moves to attract businesses to come to Idaho?
No, I don't even think it was that well thought out, honestly. This is some big businesses love this because it helps them lock in their workforce. I mean, frankly, it can allow some employers to pay under market wages because you don't have to pay market wages if your employees can't go look for better paying work. But a lot of people in the startup industry, it went through without anybody even knowing it was happening. It went through in 2016. People in the startup community, employees didn't even know it was happening. It was just kind of a wonky issue. No one was watching. And now here we are. So I'm trying to fix that one.
House Minority Leader earlier this week called the tax cuts reckless. Would you agree with his assessment?
I do. You know, this is, I mean, it's a $202 million tax cut. It's the highest tax cut in history, I think, as the majority leader says. I am not at all convinced we can afford this. We have some big bills coming our way. We still have commitments under the teacher career ladder where we have promised these raises to teachers for a five-year period. There are other things that we've promised in terms of enrollment, in terms of fixing higher education. We just had this higher education task force where all these recommendations came out, which are going to cost money. And I think if we do this, we will basically tear away our ability to fund any of our other priorities. This is going to punch a massive hole in the budget. And we have a lot of other uncertainty. We don't know what's coming our way from the feds. The federal budget was proposing, you know, 30% cuts to all the agencies, which would make us unable to fund most of our agencies, you know, health and welfare, labor. We could be called upon to come up with a lot of state money to fill those gaps. And it seems like a very dangerous time in this period of uncertainty where we don't know if we're going to be getting any of this federal money in to suddenly just get rid of all our state money. So I am not convinced at all we'll be able to fund basic necessities with a tax cut of this size.
There has been a proposal to change some of the requirements for being on Medicaid.
Yeah.
In particular, one, I think that would affect somewhere between 700 and 800 people that has to do with going to work if you are basically able-bodied.
Right.
So what do you think about those changes?
I'm really concerned about it, and I'm still in the process of having meetings to make sure that I hear absolutely every side of it. But Idaho has some of the strictest requirements to get on Medicaid. It's almost impossible to get on Medicaid in Idaho. To get on Medicaid in Idaho, you have to be a child or severely disabled, or you have to be earning under 26% of federal poverty while raising a child. Federal poverty level is $11,000. So that means you're making $3,000 or less while raising a child. And I've been informed that a large amount of that population is suffering from mental illness. Now they're talking about maybe adding into Medicaid people with stage 4 metastatic cancer, hemophilia, MS. So I'm like, look at this population of people on Medicaid. Who in that group do you think is a fat cat that's just living back, you know, kicking back, living the life on Medicaid? And to make them jump through all these extra hoops to get necessary medical care, it just seems like a farce. I think they're painting this picture of these lazy people who could be out there working. We've already built work requirements into who even gets on Medicaid. And to now go to these people with severe, severe problems and living in desperate poverty and say, hey, you got to prove to us and you got to submit all this paperwork before you can get your medical care, it just feels mean-spirited, and I don't really know what the goal is. I mean, I don't know if the goal is to just try to catch those who can't get their act together enough to submit the paperwork and kick them off their health care. That doesn't seem like a very worthy objective to me. So maybe it sounds good. You know, it sounds great as a soundbite to say, oh, we're going to, you know, accountability, we're going to make them work. But when you actually look at the people in this group, I don't think it makes any sense at all.
Representative, thank you for being here today. And very insightful. Ilana Rubel has been our guest from District 18.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
KBOI News Time 8:56. Open phones Friday after a news break at the top of the hour.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
It's an open phones Friday, KBOI News Time 9:06. Anything on your mind today? Give us a call, 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. That's 1-800-529-KBOI, pound 670 on Verizon Wireless is a free call.
Mm-hmm. You can also send us an instant message, fairly easy to do. Just go to our website, kboi.com, and there will be a place to click there that will show you how to do it. Gary of Emmett has written us an instant message. He says, Dear Chris and Paul, this Friday news cycle will be largely taken up by a congressional memo, but there is other news brewing. This other story involves Russia and Korea. Russian athletes who were barred from the Winter Olympics due to doping may attend the games in Korea. This story includes Russian government interference in international affairs. No matter what goes on in the world today, it seems Russia and Korea are involved.
The focus on these two countries reminds me of the 1950s, not to mention secret government memos about the Russians trying to subvert the United States. I even heard a Democrat mention Joe McCarthy, although under current circumstances, I think Democrats mentioning McCarthy might be throwing rocks from a glass house. So he's talking about the FBI in that case. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Russian athletes can attend, but it's unsure at this time whether or not they can compete. They can go, they can have a place to stay and all of that, but they're not sure about them being able to compete. All right, open phones Friday. Let's start it off this morning with Todd. Todd, good morning from New Plymouth.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, a question on that old gal you guys just had on, mm-hmm. talking about, you know, Medicare, not being able to get it unless you make so much money and raising children and all that.
It was actually Medicaid, yeah.
Or Medicaid.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just curious, if I've got full custody of my kids, my ex-wife doesn't have them, how is her and my children on Medicaid, if mm-hmm. that's the case?
She and the children are on Medicaid?
Yeah, free medical.
And you who are raising the kids are not?
Correct.
Well, I would say the first thing I would say is you make too much money.
Well, no, I understand that, but she was saying that only way you could be on it is if you're raising children making less than $11,000 a year.
Perhaps those who make those decisions aren't aware that you have full custody of the children.
So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of curious. She was talking, the only way you could get this is this way. Well, there's plenty of ways to get it. You just got to know how to work the system. And
When your wife first got it, was she, did she have custody of the kids?
No, it was 50-50.
Was she working?
Yes.
I don't know. That's a damn good question.
Yeah. Well, you may want to check into it.
Well, I mean, it doesn't bother me other than, you know, it's our tax dollars getting wasted.
Right.
Every time I take the kids in to get anything done, you know, I never turn in their Medicaid. I just use my own health insurance.
Sure.
But I don't know. Just thought I'd ask maybe something I didn't know.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Anybody knows, hopefully they'll give us a call.
Appreciate the call, Todd. Yeah.
Thanks, Todd.
I don't know about that particular case, but
that's something I would. Well, if she didn't have full custody of them when she first got it,
we hear a lot. We hear a lot about people who say that they need Medicaid and can't get on it, and then there are other people that they say, well, they're in a better situation than we are, and yet they're on Medicaid. So I don't think the system is perfect somehow.
Nothing's perfect. We know that. Let's go to Bill of Boise. Bill.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Earlier in the program, I don't remember exactly what time it was. You guys, Chris, I thought it was you, read an article or a story about the shooting, that middle school shooting, and turned it as an accident. How'd that happen?
Apparently, the gun fell out of a backpack and went off, and it seems odd because it hit like three people.
Right.
Shot one guy in the head, another girl in the wrist, and another girl in the side, and then two other people were hurt, I guess, from broken glass or something. But
it was
a 12-year-old
gun.
Exactly.
Well, she wasn't supposed to have it at school, so she was breaking the rule there.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that story up, and it's a long, involved story, and they led her away, 12 years old, picked up the gun at home and brought it to school. Her name is Jordan Valenzuela, I guess. She said she didn't mean to. I had the gun in my backpack. I didn't know it was loaded. My backpack fell off my desk and the gun went off.
But she couldn't answer the question, why did you bring the gun to school?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. That doesn't mention that anywhere.
Okay, you got time for just another switch of horse here about Medicaid?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm 74 years old. I'm blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to get the waiver for the A&D on Medicaid to get help to have somebody come in and clean my house. Mm-hmm. I can't get it. because I do my own bath, I dress myself, I do my own laundry. Those are, and they have a point system.
Mm-hmm.
And if your point systems don't match what they say, then you don't get Medicaid. I qualify otherwise, but because of the point system, they say I can't qualify. I've been turned down 3 times now.
You get Medicare, correct?
I get Medicare, but not Medicaid.
Hmm.
And I was looking, trying to, you know, get on an A&D waiver so that I could get help with
right.
getting somebody to come in and clean my house. And have I've got that taken care of now. But it was, it's just kind of strange. You have to fight the battles.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I mean, there are a lot of circumstances that don't really fit into certain categories that Medicaid and Medicare have set up.
Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, have a good day.
Thanks, Bill.
Good stuff. Interesting. Let's go to Kirk of Boyce, who wants to talk about non-compete. Kirk, good morning.
Yeah, a question on the compete clause. Now, what happens if the employer fires you? Does that still be in effect?
It depends on what the contract says. That there are some contracts where a non-compete clause says if you get fired, you can go anywhere you want because we don't want you anymore anyway. And then there are others that say no matter how your employment is ended, you still have to sit out 6 months or whatever it says.
Yeah, there was a case about 6 months ago that got tremendous publicity, and the guy was fired.
Yeah.
And he could not get another job in the same industry.
He could get a job doing something else, but of course, depending on what you do for a living, I mean, you can either go down quite a bit in pay or not be able to get a job doing something else.
Okay. It just seems odd if they fire you, they can't keep you from making your livelihood.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like so, it ought to be
unfair.
That it seems like it ought to be that once you're fired, I have nothing else to do with you.
Right. Yeah. So okay, that was all I had.
Thanks,
yeah.
Kirk.
Good question.
You bet.
All right, KBOI News time is 9:15. If you want to go to tomorrow night's basketball game between Boise State and the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, be caller number 6 at 208-336-3711. That's 208-336-3711. Caller number 6 gets 2 tickets to tomorrow night's UNLV game.
Hey, Boise, if you haven't been to Lady Jane's in Meridian, you are missing.
Is Idaho Talks Live. Now you can text Paul, Jay, and Chris. Text your message to 208-336-3700. Standard text rates apply. Sponsored by Diamond Heating and Cooling.
KBOI News time, 9:19. We do have a winner. Who's the winner, Todd?
Mike McKinley.
Where to go, Mike? Mike McKinley. You want a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's UNLV game. Let's go to the phones. Phone lines are open, by the way. It's open phones Friday, 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. Let's go to Mike. Mike.
Good morning. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's been on the news solid for 4 days is the so-called FBI memo or the memo that's come from the Senate. And give a little perspective on this. 98%, 99% of the FBI agents that are out there in our country today are doing an outstanding job and doing it the way they should be. I know many of them.
Okay.
But what the criticism is, apparently, because we have no idea yet, is of a few senior-level people that kind of got a slanted view on how to do things. And as they used to call it, the people on the 7th floor, maybe it was the 6th floor of the FBI building. But, the world has changed, and few agents, upper level, decided they were going to play a little politics, it looks like. And they don't know how to play it with this group. It's a different ball game. So I think we have to look at it with, open eyes. It's amazing how the Democrats that are usually against the FBI and law enforcement are now for them. And everything's wrong in this this memo. But I just wanted to give a little perspective on that. One other thing is the gymnast, the coach, that is going to go away for a long time, and the incident in the courtroom today where the father of 3 of the daughters that he molested tried to get at him. you know, I think the only satisfaction is that the individual is not going to last long in the prison system, because a lot of those prisoners have daughters too.
Yep.
And he's going to have a real wide awakening, as I would say. So anyway, that's my 3 cents for the day.
All right, thanks, Mike.
They may end up putting him in the same sort of situation, you know, like a that they do with mass murderers and those who committed treason and stuff like that, where for 23 hours
solitary
a day, they're completely alone, and then for an hour they can go out and enjoy the sunshine, you know, and, of course, with guns pointed at them.
Yeah, and in case you missed it, the father of three daughters who were abused by Larry Nassar tried to attack the former doctor in an Eaton County, Michigan court today before he was tackled and arrested by security. Now, the question everybody asks everybody, and the answer is always the same. If you had daughters and that guy attacked your daughters, would you have done the same thing? Hell yes.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
It's not the sensible thing to do, but nope. When somebody's attacking your children, the sensible thing might not be the first thing you do.
Well, one swing, and I love the way he did it. Can I have 5 minutes alone with him? No.
Can I have 1 minute?
Yeah, no. 30, no. Okay.
Well, and you could hear people kind of giggling because they thought he was just kidding.
No,
you know,
he wasn't kidding at all.
And nobody apparently anticipated that he was going to try to cross the room and go after the guy. But there were plenty of police.
Yeah, he didn't get to him.
Bailiffs, deputies, and whatnot that were in there. So he didn't actually get to the guy.
It took a bunch of them to get him down, though.
Well, you know, you get, like I said, the adrenaline flows in those situations.
I watched that movie, and yeah, they had five or six cops detain him. It was unwild.
And he looked like the best running back in the NFL. Randall Margraves is his name. Says he's a distraught father, cursed at Nassar.
Do you remember? I don't remember how many years ago. It was at least 20 years ago. There was a case where a guy had molested a boy. He was a gymnastics coach, and he had molested a boy. And they were bringing him back from someplace. He'd been in Mexico or someplace, and they were extraditing him back. And the guys were, the law enforcement officers were taking him in handcuffs through the airport.
And
the father of the boy was on
a phone.
He was on a payphone or pretending to be on a payphone. And just as the guy passed, he turned and shot him in the head and killed him.
Yeah, I remember that.
And again, that's not the sensible thing to do, because that means you're going to go to prison for murder. However, in the case where somebody is, you know, doing terrible things to your children or messing with them or attacking them or whatever, you don't necessarily, the first thing isn't, you know, I'm going to preserve myself here.
No.
That's not the first thing that pops into your head.
Open phones Friday. Let's go to Bill. Bill.
Hi, guys. Listen, real quick, if I get my points across, my son works for the FBI, and he was back in D.C., and, if you don't think there's a political game going on, you're crazy. Anyway, I won't go any more than that, other than to say that it's not surprising, you know, what has happened. Paul, you and I are in the same category that I remember I was serving in the United States military when the Washington Post decided that they were going to illegally publicize the Pentagon Papers.
Mm-hmm.
The result was such a deflation of morale in the armed forces, and yet now we've got the Washington Post, the New York Times, George Stephanopoulos, and all these people saying, "Oh my God, you can't publish this memo because it's going to wreak havoc." Well, you know what goes around comes around, and I say publish it, and let's just the only way you're going to be able to clean up. I'm not saying the Pentagon Papers didn't state what was true. All I'm saying is that the same concerns they have for the members of our security were the same back then. That's all.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Bill.
You make a good point. I mean, usually my generally go-to answer there is don't shoot the messenger. But yeah, you make a good point about publicity.
KBOI News Time 9:26.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:37. Open phones Friday, 208-336-3700. 1-800-529-5284. Give us a call.
64.
Oh, yeah, 5264. That's 1-800-529-KBOI.
There we go.
#670 on Verizon Wireless. Let's go to Bill of Nampa. Bill, good morning.
Well, hi. Good morning, guys. How's it going today?
Good.
Yeah, I've called in several times over the years, and I guess one thing, I've got a picture of you, Paul J., from back in the 70s to where you've got an afro and a Fu Manchu mustache.
Yep, I remember those motorcycle riding days.
There you go. Yeah, and the lapels on your jacket probably had to be 8 inches wide. But back then, I had a 32-inch waist. Too,
there you are. So. Yeah, me too, probably.
Anyway, yeah, about this non-compete, there's kind of such a funny thing. I'm born and raised here. Mm-hmm. I've lived here 60 years, with the exception of working in Seattle and Denver, respectively, for about a year and a half each. But, you know, it just surprises me again that this state is, you know, right to work, to where you can go into an employer and they can say it's at-will employment. We can let you go at any time for any reason, you know, valid or otherwise, this, that, and the other, and then try to hang a non-compete on you. And one company I work for has been several years ago. But I went in, interviewed with one gentleman, went back in, met the owner, you know, went through all the bells and whistles. All of my references were checked. So he said, well, I'm ready to offer you a job. So I went in there, met with him, and he had the paperwork in front of him, and it got down to at-will employment and non-compete. And I said, you know, hey, I just can't live with that. And he went on to say a couple other things. And I said, you know, if we can get rid of those, I can be in here Monday ready to go to work for you. So anyway, he did delete those out, the non-compete, and the at-will was still in there. And I guess I can understand that to a certain degree. But he also had in there that benefits would be paid after 90 days of employment. And the hilarious part is, the handwriting was on the wall for me, because after about 4 months, I could tell, you know, I'm not mentioning a company or an industry, but the owner was an alcoholic. I mean, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I saw the guy drunk, and I knew it wasn't a career move, if you will.
Right.
But, you know, I stayed with the company. I did what they did, and they went through some other problems, and I figured, hey, it was time to go. And I had copies made of the employment understanding and the policy handbook and everything else. So I left, and I went to work for what would be essentially a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a nice, nasty letter from an attorney that was working out of his garage or something. And it was a threat for this and that. And so anyway, he asked for any proof or evidence. So I certified mailed him the receipts I had. And what this employer had done was basically, you know, photocopier, I guess you can do it. Where I signed on the bottom, he just apparently just cut it off and put my signature on there and claimed that I did it. But anyway, I came out of it smelling like a rose. But it's just sad so many people can get, you know, roped into, number one, an at-will employment situation, and then number two, a non-compete. Again, that can put a That can break a guy that's a tradesman, a plumber.
Yeah,
you know,
no question.
A salesman. Anyway, that's about all I've got. I just wanted to share that story with the listeners.
All right, good stuff. Thanks,
Bill. And there are a lot of reasons to leave employment. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have a specialty that's in demand, but you can go to work for a place, and after a couple of months, you realize they're really not treating you very well. You know, the atmosphere is bad. You know, things are looking terrible, and so you want to get out of there and go someplace else. And if you have a non-compete,
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, exactly. Where are you going to go? Do you just stay there and get treated poorly?
Well, not if you're like Bill and take care of your business when you sign on.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's go to Pro-Life. Pro-Life, good morning.
Yeah, you know, I usually talk about the proper role of government, but today I'm going to talk about the proper role of churches.
Okay.
And what's happening is Christian people, say conservative Christian people, they're voting for politicians to do what the churches should do, to lead things morally. Now, the churches were all kind of shut down, except the liberal churches don't live the rules, you know, that you're supposed to not bring politics into church because you see liberal, like Democrat candidates, go into churches, especially black churches, and give sermons, and they're political. I mean, they're a political speech in a church. Now, see, the conservative churches follow that 1950 rule that you're not supposed to do that. But anyway, if the churches, their real role is to protect the morals of the community, but the churches just hide away, you know, and they're not going to come out in the streets and really do anything, and morals are not necessary. They're not partisan politics. You know, issues like we've defined that abortion is a political question, that homosexuality is a political question, that pornography is a political question, but they're not. They're really moral questions, and the churches should represent the Christian point of view on all of that, but they don't do it. They're too wimpy. And so that's all I'm saying is that, say, like when we have the gay parade, there's only two guys, myself and another Christian fellow, that go down there that have enough love for those mixed-up people to stand there with our signs and tell them, listen, you need to go straight and have children. This is not natural. It's not what God would have you do. And the same thing about abortion, you know, when you tell the women that are selfish and want to get rid of their babies, that they're murdering their babies, they don't want to hear that. And the churches are supposed to do that kind of thing, and they're not. And so I'm just, hopefully some church people, and the Trump administration now is not going to slam some kind of churches for participating in moral activism. So that's all I've got to say. I know you probably got other people there, and I like your show.
Right. Pro-Life, thank you very much for the call.
All right.
Thanks.
I think a lot of times, you know, when people say something should be a moral issue and not a legislative issue, it kind of changes when they take it up as legislation. You know, when you make something, when you put something into the laws of your state or your city or your county, it just has to be a political issue now because, you know, there's always going to be somebody who says, well, you know, why is that a law? We need to change that.
Yeah, and that's true. And not everybody has the same beliefs, the same morals.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, we're all different. It's 9:45.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
All right, phone lines are open. It's 9:48 on our open phones Friday.
I have a good number of instant messages. Bob of Boise was speaking of Representative Ilana Rubel that we had here. It's on Friday. We have Minority Friday when a Democrat comes in from the state legislature. And, of course, Majority Thursday is the day before. But Bob says, your guest is a great example of how the Democrats are dividing this country. I am a native Idahoan, and I disagree with her way of thinking. Well, Democrats don't disagree with her way of thinking. So, I mean, the fact that we have two political parties, I mean, the nation's there's a certain amount of division anyway. Bob says, Chris, I have a challenge for those who think human activity is the cause of any rise in the temperature. No real rise in 18 years, though. There have been times in human history, like the Holocene maximum period, where the temperatures were as high or higher. Since that was before the Industrial Revolution, just what caused that average temperature to be so high? When you answer that question, then you will have the answer to the temperatures today. I might add that plants grow better when the CO2 is higher. Maybe we haven't gotten to the optimal CO2 and temperatures. Does anyone know what the optimum of those are. And it says, P.S., I have gone toe-to-toe with Rocky Barker on this for several years and hundreds of emails. And getting back to that question about whether anybody knows what they are, I'm going to go with no.
You know, one good...
Not off the top of my head, anyway.
One good volcanic eruption back in the old days would cause more disruption than probably...
Like Krakatoa.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it changes climate, et cetera, dramatically, more dramatically than man's influence.
Bill of Boise says, why would President Trump go after the FBI if he did not honestly think there is wrongdoing going on by them? What on earth would he have to gain by sticking his neck out like he is doing? He said he was going to expose the corruption, and this is yet another promise he is sticking to, as far as I am concerned. My answer in that is that not everybody in the country thinks that he does things because of sensible reasons. So there are people who just think he's being crazy, and then there are other people, like yourself, who think he's doing exactly what he's supposed to. Mm-hmm. William of Garden City says, morning, Paul, Jay, and Chris. It really gets to me every time when you talk to a politician about tax cuts, they always respond saying that they don't think they can afford it. It seems they have forgot that it's our money first. If we have to get by on less, they need to also. All right. And generally, I think they're thinking about things like maintenance and in terms of people, the people who, you know, have absolutely nothing. Mark of Boise says, for what it's worth, there is 22 ammo on the shelves. I see this as signs of better times. The whole time Obama was president, no ammo to be found. Now, wasn't that because people were stocking up?
Yes. Well, that's his point.
Yeah.
That's his point.
So people don't feel they need as many bullets now.
Right. Go back to the phones and Randy of Magic Valley.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Randy.
Sorry, you caught me off guard. Hey, on this global warming thing, you know, if you study it and you really study it and are seriously objective, you know, when you have India and China not intending to do anything for at least 20 years, and right now they're both expanding the greenhouse gas emissions.
True.
And nobody's going to do anything about it. It was just always to beat up America, and if you looked at it, you'd say, well, it looks like they're just trying to bring America down, you know, in any way they can. But, you know, the gentleman who spoke about the whatever period it was, I know the Vikings were growing grapes on Greenland, which is, and I've said this before on this program, you know, which is colder than Iceland at one point, and there were no cars then. So, you know, there's lots of things about it. But, you know, if you stop and look at the way they intend to solve the problem, it really does nothing, really. There's no way that they can say it will work. There's no, it's just a theory. And the thing of it is in the meantime, you know, what really is the problem? And so, you know, I don't know that there's an answer to it, but I just know that when we have what we would call misinformation, and then we act on it, I'm not willing to do so. I'll hang up. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Now, here's my kind of my rebut to that. Pictures of Beijing, China, when they have that smog. Now, you can't look at those in Mexico City. You can't look at those and go, yeah, man's not having any influence here.
Yeah.
You can't.
I look at scientific things this way. There are people who spend their entire lives studying these things,
mm-hmm.
and there are people who checked into it for 30 minutes one day, and I have heard extremely adamant views from both sides of those people about how much they know and how much they, you know, think it's all common sense and we should know all this sort of thing about it.
Sure.
I don't necessarily agree. And scientists, the reason that they keep checking things and keep looking for answers to things is because we don't know everything yet. In fact, we probably don't know 1% about anything in the universe yet, but they are still looking into it. Right now, there are a bunch who think that this is what's going on with the planet. There are others who say no. And there are some people who say, well, why don't we try to do something? Again, you know, not an expert, can't tell you exactly what we should be doing. But on the other hand, I don't really think that there are a lot of scientists that are just out there to bring down the country.
No.
I think the ones who really believe in it really do believe in it.
It's kind of odd, though, that two guys say you and I could go and study for 50 years and reach absolutely different conclusions.
This is true, too.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, that's going to do it for this week, 9:55. Basketball action tomorrow night, 6 o'clock game, right?
6 o'clock. 5:30 pregame here on KBOY.
Boise State, UNLV. Enjoy.